We often talk about Celebrate Recovery being for anybody who struggles with a hurt, hang-up, or habit. So whether you're somebody who was hurt as a child and you're still dealing with those issues, or you've got people-pleasing hang-ups and things that keep you stuck in relationships, or you're addicted to something, food, sex, alcohol, whatever it is, that Celebrate Recovery is really for anybody. In fact, that's the truth. Celebrate Recovery is for all of us because we've all been hurt and we've all hurt other people. We've all got things in our lives that keep us stuck and keep us frozen, things we wish we didn't deal with. And for many of us, we have these addiction issues that also just rob us of any joy or peace that we have in our life. The thing about Celebrate Recovery is that it's a biblical program and it's got 8 principles that lead us from one place to the next place over one day at a time after one day at a time. So we begin where we realize that we're not God. We come out of denial. We face our fears. We face the problems that have keeping us stuck. We turn our lives over to Jesus. We do things like taking a moral inventory of our lives and we look at all the things that we've done have been done to us to help us come out of that. We talk to other people about what's happening. Then at the end, we serve other people because we believe that God uses our pain so that we can help other people when they go through pain. And so what we really want to do is just tell you about this ministry, this place where you can come and you can find healing no matter what's going on in your life. We have some people that have gone through Celebrate Recovery for years that have dealt with issues like anxiety. And they wake up every morning in a cold sweat and they just look at their day and they think, how am I going to get through today? By working the principles and steps of recovery, they're able to find day by day freedom over that issue. We have other people who are severely depressed and they also need to find a way out. There's people like me who struggle with anxiety and am a recovering alcoholic. And I know that when I'm hurting, I medicate. Now, I haven't medicated with alcohol for over a decade, but I can find anything, whether it's working out or whether it's, you know, spending money or anything. Just give it to me and I will overdo it. And so we find that we've got these issues and what we need to do is we come clean about it. We talk to each other about it. We talk to God about it. We allow Him to work in our lives and to find the thing that's really causing us pain. You know, the reality of it is that whatever we're doing tends to be a symptom. We think I need to come to recovery because I drink too much or I'm online too much or I spend too much money. And while that's true, we need to get out that sinful behavior. We need to root it out. The truth is that often the reason we're doing those things are buried deeper inside of us. And so that's what recovery allows us to do. It allows us to find that pain that's in our lives, that's keeping us frozen, keeping us stuck.
Well, good morning. And again, I am very, very grateful for the ministry of Celebrate Recovery here at Trinity Church. God is using, and has used that ministry to really bless so many people here at Trinity Church. So, and not just Trinity, but even around the city, around the region. Again, just as was mentioned, it's easy to confuse. This is for a particular group of people, and yet recovery is for all of us because we're all recovering from sin's grip on our lives. And so we're very, very glad to be able to highlight Celebrate Recovery this weekend. For those of you who are here for the first time, we've been walking through the Gospel of Mark. For those who are online, again, we welcome you. And we've been kind of looking at this idea of what it means for us to know who Jesus is, why he came, and what are the implications for us. And so we're going to continue that this morning as we look at Mark chapter 12, and we're going to be looking at verses 28 through 34. But I want to ask a question. And hopefully it doesn't cause a riot in here, all right? So everybody has heard of the GOAT, that is the greatest of all time, right? Everybody's heard that term or that phrase before. And so I want to ask a question, and I want you to give me your opinion of who or what is the GOAT. Okay, so if we had to say Michael Jordan or LeBron James, who's the GOAT? Those who say Michael Jordan, raise your hand. Those who say LeBron James, raise your hand. All right. If you've never heard of Michael Jordan or LeBron James, raise your hand. Actually, the last two services, we had several people who had never heard of them at all. I don't think they were playing either. So, okay. How many of you don't care at all? Okay, very good. Kind of figured. All right, how about this one? Lord of the Rings, Gone with the Wind. All right, so all of the young people are saying, Gone with the Wind, is that like a flatulence issue or something like that? So please don't at me and don't send me any notes, all right? So how many, Lord of the Rings, raise your hand. Best movie of all time, okay? Gone with the Wind. Wow, okay, all right. So this is not a new question. It's not a new issue. I mean, it's in the news. We debate it all the time. Who's the greatest? What is the greatest of all time? This was actually happening during Jesus's day as well. In fact, they asked the question, what is the greatest commandment of all time? What is the greatest commandment? And the response that Jesus has to this question, it actually reveals a very, very important part of our own lives. It actually shows us what's really, really important in our lives, the way Jesus answers this question. And so if you have a copy of the scriptures, Mark chapter 12, verses 28 through 34, if you're looking on the Bible that the church has provided, it's page 848. Page 848. So Jesus, as you know, has been being attacked and opposed by religious leaders, starting with a group that came and asked him a question about John the Baptist's baptism. And Jesus responded and owned them in that response. And then a group of Herodians and Pharisees came to Jesus and asked him a question about kind of a political question, like about Caesar. And Jesus says, render to Caesar what is Caesar, render to God what is God's, and he owns them. And last week we looked at the Sadducees and they asked him a very ridiculous question about whose husband or whose wife would she be if, talking about levirate marriage, if a woman married a man and then he died without any offspring and then she married his brothers on through seven and they all died. Whose wife would she be and in the resurrection? And Jesus owns them. And so we have another question today. We have another question in verse 28. So this is the question about the greatest commandment. Verse 28, this is what it says. And one of the scribes, and scribes, when we talk about scribes, they were called lawyers or religious lawyers, not the lawyers kind of what we think about, legal lawyers, but religious lawyers because of their meticulous nature of interpreting the law. That's the reason they're called lawyers or scribes. And so they could either be Sadducees or Pharisees, but Matthew tells us, Matthew's version of this tells us that he's a Pharisee. So a scribe comes up to Jesus and he heard them disputing. Who is them? He heard Jesus disputing with the Sadducees. And then seeing that he answered them well, Jesus gave the answer. And then the scribe asked this question. Which commandment is the most important? Now, we don't know the reason he asked the question other than the fact that he was curious. We do know that this question is probably not a trap question like the others. It is a sincere question. It is an honest question. And I think he models for us a very, very important point that if you have a question that is confusing you about God, about the Bible, and about life, that you can bring that question to God, that God's shoulders are broad enough to handle our questions. If you have questions about the world and your questions about where you fit in the world, guess what? God is not afraid of your questions. There may be some small group leaders and other people say, well, stop asking that question. Or even your parents, stop asking that question. Just trust God. That's such an easy answer. And that only frustrates you more than actually, it placates and frustrates you more than it actually leads you. So this man models for us, give your sincere and honest questions to a God's to a God who is living and who will respond to your questions. He may not respond the way we think he ought to respond, but he will respond to your questions. And so he asked this question, which is the greatest commandment? Now, the very interesting thing about this is that that this debate was going on, this rabbinic debate was going on, and it was going on based on how the laws and the commandments were grouped in the Old Testament. So based on the Ten Commandments, the Pharisees and the religious leaders had come up with 613 commands to kind of protect the Ten Commandments and to help the people of God live out the Ten Commandments. So 613 commands, 365 were negative and 248 were positive. And so they were asking this question: out of the 613 commandments, which one is the most important commandment? Which one is proton? Which one is the weightiest one to actually help us to live out the Ten Commandments? So this is a debate that was going on during Jesus' time. And so the scribe comes and says, hey, I just want to know which command will help me live according to the law so that I'm ultimately pleasing God. So Jesus responds, the most important is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. Now Jesus is taking this passage, he's actually taking them back to the basics, which is found in Deuteronomy chapter 6. And this is the passage that Jesus is quoting. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. Now, this is called the Shema. Everybody say Shema. I figured if Blake can give you a Hebrew word, I can give you one too. Shema. Shema is the very center of Hebrew religious life. Every devoted Jew recited Shema in the morning and in the evening. When we went to Israel, our leader, our rabbi, John DeCreiter, every morning we got up, we would say Shema with everything we had. We would do it with gusto. And every single devout Jew would quote Shema. It just simply means, hear, O Israel. God is about to say something important, and you need to listen to what he's about to say. And so, when Jesus quotes this, this is what he's saying. Love God supremely. I'm in your notes. You want to know what really is important in your life? It's not your money. It's not your car. It's not your house. It's not your job. It's not your career. Jesus is saying, you really want to know what is the GOAT and who is the GOAT, the greatest of all time. If you really want to know, it starts with you and I loving God supremely. That is above everything else that we have, above everything else that we own, above everything else that shoots for our time, to love God supremely above everything and everyone else. My wife, my children, my job, my boss, my grandparents, my mother, my father. Loving God above everything. And so Jesus starts from the very beginning to teach this scribe. It's not all the 600, it's beginning with love God supremely. Now the natural question is, how do I love God supremely? That's a platitude, Marvin. That's a platitude. Like, yeah, love God supremely. Well, the first way you and I can love God supremely is to love God for who he is. Not for what he can do for us. That is a consumeristic mindset, but to love God for who he is. And the question is, who is God? And so when Jesus quotes Deuteronomy chapter 6, the Lord is one, and to love the Lord your God with all your heart. And he says, the idea behind this word Lord is first, is that God is a covenant-keeping God. He's a trustworthy God. And so when I love God for who he is, I am actually loving God because he is a trustworthy God. In other words, what God says, he will do. That God is not someone who makes a promise and then he goes back on his promise. God does not have integrity issues. God says, I will make a promise. And the biggest promise that God made, he would send a Messiah. And we are learning from that Messiah today. And we've been learning from who he is and why he came and what are the implications for us over the past year. He's a covenant-keeping God. The Lord is Yahweh, is his covenant name. And he says, you can trust me. So I'm loving God because he's a covenant-keeping God. Another reason is that because there is no other. When you hear the word Lord or Yahweh, he's saying there is no other God. There are a lot of imposters. There are a lot of individuals who will claim to be God or gods who claim to be gods, but they are not real. There's only one God who is sovereign and living over the entire world, and that's Yahweh. That's the Lord. So when Jesus takes them back, he is actually taking them back to the very basics. But there's another very important point. When Jesus says, the Lord is one, he is actually helping Mark's audience to understand a very, very important issue and a very important point. See, Mark is talking to a group of Gentiles. He's talking to a group of individuals who came, they were saved, they trusted Jesus out of polytheism. That is, polytheism is the worship of many gods and worshiping gods who had sovereignty over little small domains. And so when Jesus takes them back to Shema, he's actually saying God is one. And there are no others. Now, what does this mean, though? What does this mean? Let me try to give you the example. So, for instance, if you were taking a voyage somewhere, if you were going on a cruise, you would have a little figurine in your pocket of the god Neptune, the Greek god Neptune. And you would pray to the god Neptune because Neptune was over the domain of water and sea. He didn't do well on land, you all. He just did the sea. And so if you were about to travel, you would pray to the god Neptune. And you would give your allegiance to Neptune because you were about to make a voyage. So you would pray to Neptune. If you were about to make a speech, so I love individuals who come to Trinity Church and they don't have any kind of religious background and they're just starting to know who Jesus is. And every so often I'll have somebody come up to me afterwards and say, dude, that was a really good speech you just gave. So they haven't been tainted by religion and they haven't been tainted by Christianity per se. And so they are they're authentic in their relationship with God. They don't even know that it's a sermon. They don't know it's a message. They don't know it's preaching and teaching. They just say, man, that was a good speech you just gave. And so I think that's cool. So if I was back in my office and if I was living in a pagan world, I would have a little figurine of a Greek god, the Greek god Hermes and the Roman god Mercury, and I would bow down to those gods because I'm about to step on the stage and make a speech and I want you to like me and I want my pathos and ethos and logos to be okay and I want you to hear what I'm going to say and I want to make sure that I'm doing a good job. And so I would pray to those gods to give me strength so that I could do a good job because Hermes and Mercury, they were gods of communication. If I were about to go into battle or to play Battle Royale on Fortnite, all of the older people was like, I have no idea what you just said. But everybody, y'all, how many know what Fortnite is? Okay, a few people do. How many of you don't know what Fortnite is? Okay, so, all right, so I'm not going to explain it. You ask your grandkids, all right? You would pray to Jupiter, the Roman god, or you would pray to Zeus, the Greek god. And I would, if I wanted to win the battle, that's who I would pray to. Young man, young lady, single. If you were like, man, I like that girl over there. She looks so beautiful. Or I like him. He is so handsome. He looks so good. I just want a chance. Can I get a chance? Can I get those 7 digits? And okay, I got to remember what audience I'm in, right? So, like, if you want to date that person, you would pray to the god, the goddess Venus, or Cupid, because you don't want to get rejected for the 50th time. You want to succeed this time. You want to walk away saying, I got the girl or I got the guy. You would take out your little figurine and you would pray to those gods and goddesses so you can be successful. So the reason Jesus reminds them that God is one is that with all of these other gods, you have to split your allegiance. You can't give your allegiance to one God. And so what Jesus takes them back to is that God is sovereign over every domain. He is not some weak God who only has a sliver. He has all of it. He is sovereign over work and play, and he is sovereign over marriage and singleness. He is sovereign over money, and he is sovereign over all of our lives. God is one in existence and essence, and he is one, and he deserves all of our allegiance, all of our devotion. And you don't split your allegiance between these other gods. You give your allegiance to one God. And so when Jesus says this, he is actually helping them to understand that he is master of all. So to love God supremely means to love God for who he is. He is one and sovereign over everything and deserves all of our attention. But not only do we love God, what it means to love God supremely, to love him for who he is, but also to love him with all we are. So here's the text again, and Jesus answered, the most important, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God, here it is, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And Jesus is saying, I want you to love God with all of who you are. Now I could go and give you I could parse the words and give you what's the meaning of heart, what's the meaning of soul, what's the meaning of mind, what's the meaning of strength. I could give you that, but there would be overlap. In essence, what Jesus is saying here and what God was saying to Moses back then, love God with your everything. Love him with your every. Love him with your mind. You know, Christianity has gotten a bad rap to say Christianity is kind of some easy believism, and it is a weak-minded religion or a weak-minded faith. But this passage is all about loving God, partly loving God with your intelligence. God has given us a mind to build and to solve problems and to be wise. And so he says, I want you to give your mind to me. So whether it's reading books or listening to podcasts, rubbing shoulders with those who will help you think through certain things. He says, love me with your mind, your soul, the very essence. Love me with your body, your strength. And this is not love that's this superficial, kind of flimsy. This is about devotion. This is about allegiance. This is about the locus of your very life, the center of your very life. You give that over. Now, again, I'm not saying it's easy. This is hard. And yet the Spirit of God gives us the power to actually love God. And the reason why I believe we can love God and to give him more and more of our lives is because he's loved us. And when he loved us, he created capacity in us to love him back. So Jesus says, love him with your everything. Love him with your everything. Not some external ritual, but from the very depths of your heart. So love God supremely. Love God supremely with for who he is and with all that we are. But then Jesus goes on to love people genuinely. This is a very simple message. I could have just come up here and say, hey, this passage is about two things. Love God, love people. That's really all this passage is about. Love people genuinely. Very interesting thing about this. Here's a passage. The second is this. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these. There is no other commandment, single, greater than these, plural. Scribe only asked for the greatest commandment. Jesus gave him two commands. And the scribe said to him, you are right, teacher. Hey, you're pretty good, Jesus. That's kind of what he's saying. You have truly said that he is one and there is no other beside him. So this is the first time any rabbi had fused these two commandments together. So Jesus says you cannot have one without the other. The interesting thing is that what Jesus did is very, very smart, very, very wise. What he did, he took the Ten Commandments. The first four is about loving God. The last six are about loving people. And he broke it up. He said, love God supremely, love people genuinely. He said, all of the Ten Commandments hang on these two statements. He says, love people genuinely. He gets this from Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. You shall take no vengeance or bear no grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And he says, I am the Lord. And so what he is saying is this, to love God is to love people. To love God is to love people. Here's a crazy thing is this. I can say all day long, I love God, and you'll never be able to know whether I love him or not until you see some ocular demonstration of that love. And the only way you can really tell, my love for God is not necessarily determined by how many verses I read. It's not really necessarily determined by how many songs I sing. My love for God is not really determined by how many tears I cry during a song. My love for God is not necessarily determined by how many times I come to church. My love for God, according to what Jesus says, and according to him fusing these two together, my love for God is actually demonstrated on how I treat those image bearers who are made in the image of God. See, this is one of the only ways that you and I can determine how much we truly love God. I can say all day long how much I love Tanya, and I do. But if I never ever meet a need that she has, If I never ever show her that I love her, if I never ever dote over her, if I never ever spend time with her, if I never ever listen to her, she should doubt whether I truly love her. So what Jesus is saying is this, that if you're having problems with the second command, if you are not doing the second command, it is linked back to the first command, and you're probably having problems with the first one as well. Because to love God is to actually love people. Now, here's the second one. Loving people means all people, not just my people. Amen. We all got people, right? You got people, I got people. You got people, I got people. And we are prone by default to spend the greatest amount of time with people who are most like us. Most like us. So when Jesus says love your neighbor, he is actually saying love all people, not just your people. So that means if you're from a different ethnic group, this passage is calling you to love someone who is outside of your ethnic group. Black people loving white people loving black people, Hispanic, Latino people loving Asian people, and Asian people loving Latinos. It means that Democrats have to love Republicans and Republicans have to love Democrats. I just felt a silent, like, no. That means older people have to love younger people and younger people have to love older people. That means Michigan fans have to love Michigan State fans and Michigan State fans have to love Michigan fans. So you're saying this passage is going a little bit too far with that? It really does. It means that he's called us to love everybody. Not just our people, but all people. I have to be honest. 15, 20 years ago, you would not have been my people. I had in mind that I was going to pastor an all African American church. It's just much easier. I don't have to like explain the slang that I'm saying. It's just much easier. I know the terrain. And God, that's what I was doing. I was crying when God said, no, you gotta get a different group of people. And so just like God, the Holy Spirit, met Peter on that rooftop, he met me. And he said, how dare you say who your people are and who your people aren't? And so about the last 15 or 20 years, I've been on a journey of saying, God, whoever your people are and whoever you bring before me, I will try my best by the power of the Holy Spirit to love them. Be they black, white, Latino, Asian, whoever they are, I will love them. I'm not saying that it's always been easy. But living this passage, it's easier just to love my people. Young people, it's easier just to hang out with your people and throw older people to the curb. There's wisdom in this room. And if you are Generation Z, if you're Generation Gen X, if you're a millennial, there's wisdom in this room. Take advantage of the wisdom in this room. If you are a boomer and a builder, take advantage of the energy and strength and intelligence and wisdom in this room. God says, these are my people. How dare you call them not your people? So this is significant. Jesus says, love God, love people. Find out who they are, hear their story, understand them, struggle through the tension of loving people. Loving people is hard. It's a hard thing to do, even for your pastor. So I was at the Mac the other day, a couple of days ago, and I was, you know, after I work out, I do steam and I do sauna. And so I go into the sauna and I'm like, again, sweating profusely. And so I come out and I'm just kind of leaning over the sink. And so a guy comes out after me and he yells at me, like, pay attention to rule 8. Like, because there are rules on the sauna that you're supposed to follow, right? Pay attention to rule 8. I'm a grown man. You don't talk to me that way. This is what I'm thinking in my head, right? And so I look and I say, okay, what is rule 8? So I look on the door, and I see what rule 8 is, and I did break rule 8. And I know all type A personalities are like, what is rule 8? I'm gonna go to the Mac just to see what rule 8 is. I'll tell you what rule 8 is. Rule 8 is, and again, I don't mean to gross anybody out, is no spitting. So when you're sweating profusely, as a baseball player, I did that all the time. And it just natural habit. And there are little lats on the bench. There are little holes. And I'm perfect. I get it through the hole every time. And it goes down to the floor. So nobody sits on the floor underneath the bench. So I'm trying to justify my thing, right? I'm trying to justify. And so he was right, I was wrong. But the way he talked to me, it raised up something inside of me. And he was not my people at that time. And I wanted so badly to go and find him and give him a little bit of wisdom that would not have been from the Spirit. And the Spirit of God said, if you do that, how would he ever know that you actually love God? Because the two go together. Loving God is demonstrated by how we love people, and not just our people. All people, even people who hurt us, even people who talk badly about us, even people who ridicule us, we're called to love them. We're called to bless them. And I want to introduce you to two people who God has called to actually love him through loving people. And I'm going to ask Christy and John to come up. Can you give them a round of applause as they come up? So this is Christy and John Maniscalco. Christy has been over CR for the last 7 years, but she's been a part of CR for the last 14 years. And so Christy, tell us a little bit of your story. And then John, after Christy tells her, if you can tell yours, a little bit of your story, how you ended up in CR.
So we have 6 children. And sometimes we met up with challenges in parenting when our children made choices that we were, that very much concerned us. And out of that concern, my response to that was not always very healthy. I was anxious and angry and controlling and just basically a wreck. Someone suggested that I attend Celebrate Recovery. So that's when I showed up.
Yeah, very good. John, what about you?
My wife was very kind when she said it was just a little thing. It was very disruptive. And I like control. I like control, consistency. I like even. And we were anything but that. We were very out of control at that time.
Yeah. So when you look, when people hear CR, Celebrate Recovery, I know we've covered a little bit of it. What are some misconceptions, some misnomers about CR that may keep people like at arm's length to say, nope, that's for those people. Those are not my people. Those are for those people. What are some misconceptions?
Well, they're partially right. It is for those people, but those people are all of us. So when I came in and I got into a step study and I started digging, the Lord started revealing things to me. It was about my anger and my codependency. And one of the comforting things I found at CR was the community where there were other people who were angry and codependent. And so I knew I wasn't alone. So it really just, the misperception for me was that it was for people with chemical dependency.
Yeah.
And it really is for any of those things that stand in our way of our relationship with God and others.
Yeah. So John, this is a question for you in terms of how Celebrate Recovery has impacted your relationship with Christy, your relationship with your children, even relationships with other men. How has Celebrate Recovery impacted you in that way?
I struggle with codependency, and I really didn't think that that was a man's thing, codependency. Men don't struggle with codependency, right? But what I found out was that was inhibiting my prayer life because it was between Christy and I, because the hurts that I carried from a long time ago played in every aspect of our lives. It played in everything that came from Christy to me, and her hurt was hurting me. And I would stuff it away because I can stuff real good. I can put it away and not know that it ever existed. But CR had a way of pulling that out of me. And it cleared that from me. And I thought, if I don't love myself, how can I love anybody else?
Yeah.
And that's what it gave me, is the ability to love myself. And then I could love others.
Yeah. So if you had to leave us with one word or a couple of ideas regarding CR, an invitation, what would that be?
I would challenge you to set aside any fear or doubt that you might have about what Celebrate Recovery is about and that it doesn't apply to you. And check out a step study. It can help you. It just is a transformational ministry to help you look at things that you're struggling with and get to the root of why it is. I found out why I respond the way I respond. And God just kept revealing things to me. And I would challenge any of you, and there are signups out in the atrium. Take a look at a step study and see what God can reveal to you through that.
Yeah. Well, listen, Christy and John, thank you all so much for how you love him and how that love for him is actually being demonstrated in your love for people and love for this church. And so thank you all so much for serving. So, yeah. And just simply to fill out the last portion for all of us who are needs to fill in the blanks. Loving God and people is a matter of heart devotion, not religious duty. We do it from a place of authentic love for God and not out of duty because we get a check mark or we get a star. God wants it to come from our hearts and not on an external kind of pressure. And so I want you to think about your love for God and your love for people. If you have to rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, where is it right now? Again, no condemnation, no judgment, but just simply say, do I love God? Am I giving him my full allegiance in every area of my every? And then if there are two or three people or one person that you say, man, I'm really having trouble loving this person. I don't know what to do. I'm Can you help me? And Holy Spirit, give me the power and strength to love this person. And as you're reflecting on that, the worship team will lead us now in helping us to really love God, at least think about loving God and loving others.